Hey, hello, it's Matt Bowler from Bowler's Desk. Doing a little intro here for our political podcast that Rick Epps and I do. Rick joins me a lot of times. Every now and then, he can't make it, so I kind of wing it. Like last week, I ended up having this really very interesting conversation about American torture and targeted assassination programs from World War II until today, and all of the torture victims and torture survivors that live in San Diego. There are over 11,000 of them. But this time around, Rick and I didn't talk about that, but we did meet over in front of the San Diego County Administration Building. I thought that would be apropos because of Prop 8 and DOMA on the Supreme Court, on the tips of everyone's tongue, you know, and it's just down the street from where Mayor Filner has been trying to do business and getting in one fight after another, back to back to back. He even kind of had his own throwback Thursday with Sun Road coming back. Remember Sun Road? Remember they built that building two stories too tall next to the airport over in Kearny Mesa, and then they had to tear a floor down? That was one of Micah Gehry's big things. I just kind of got a little nostalgic listening to Sun Road in the news again. But this time, it wasn't really, it was something a little bit more controversial and causing the mayor more problems. God, he had a bunch going on. He had Sun Road, he had his top aides quitting. He had his trip to Paris. Who paid for that? Who paid for his security escort? There was a lot to talk about. Of course, we talked about DOMA and Prop 8. And probably the most under-publicized, under-talked about, under-media-sized. Is media a word? Under-media-sized? I don't think that's a word. I'm pretty positive that's not a word. But the under-storyized... something that was not given its proper place in the media was the Voting Rights Act. That decision and how that is going to affect our state, local, federal elections. Supreme Court really, really kind of touched home for a lot of people here. We talked about Syria, of course. We talked about Turkey, and of course, Egypt is back in the news. And then, you know, again, back full circle with the mayor and his trip to support the Iranian Democratic Movement. Who paid for that? You know, Republicans are saying lobbyists paid for that. He's saying, no, this democratic organization, this group trying to promote democracy in Iran paid for that. People are saying, well, who paid for the cops to go with you? There were two San Diego police officers that went to Paris with him, you know. All that stuff costs a lot of money, so, you know, it was a very interesting conversation with Rick, again, out in front of the, right on the Pacific Coast Highway there, with in front of the San Diego County Administration Building, looking across the Pacific Coast Highway to the Star of India, the San Diego Bay. It was, started off kind of cool, and then got really sunny, and I got sunburned, and again, my complaint about San Diego parks and San Diego public spaces: there is not enough shade. Anyhow, so hearing all this, listen to the podcast. Tell us what you think. You can hop on your soapbox by hopping on ours. Call the soapbox, 619-663-4531. 619-663-4531. Leave a message, ask a question, and we'll put it on Political Podcast. You don't have to agree with us. That's the great thing about being in the country we're in. I can still respect people that I disagree with, and if you have your opinion, absolutely, share it. 619-663-4531. And now, the Political Podcast from BowlersDesk.com. Front of the county admin building on the west side of it. I remember seeing Jerry Brown campaign for president here.
trying to pitch his flat tax thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was a while back.
Oh, yeah. That was a few years ago, right?
A few years ago. I remember that was one of the first sort of national political things I covered was early on in my career was Jerry Brown running for president, trying to get everyone excited about his flat. He had the big file cabinets. Remember, he'd go around and show and throw out all the files. And, 10%.
Yeah.
What a horrible idea that was.
Well, I remember Jerry Brown coming to San Diego State, and all the students were all excited to see him, and... He didn't mention anything about how what was going to happen because of his budget plan and how it was going to basically undo public education, higher education.
Yeah, flat tax would have been a horrible idea.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
And it was just like the one time he tried to pander to an electorate right off the bat. I mean, I don't know if he was pandering that much in the 60s when he was governor the first time, but that flat tax thing seemed like a real.
Yeah,
it seemed like a dumb
thing. Well, it was simplistic in its notion.
Yeah, it is.
No,
it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work. Look at that. And there's an airplane.
Yeah, today we're down by the county administration building.
So you can see and then there's the Ocean Star of India, and then you can hear the planes landing or taking off. I didn't think they took off over the city anymore.
They only do that. They normally don't. They usually take off to the west.
Oh,
so there must be some rationale why they're taking off to the east today.
Yeah. So this week was crazy. This week was a lot of fun for me, I gotta say.
Me too.
It was a lot of fun. Locally, it was nutbags in the mayor's office this week. He's always been a little wacky to deal with, and everybody kind of wrote it off as, oh well, that's just Filner. He's kind of a goofball, but he had his Irene. I forget her last name now. Irene, the chief of media relations.
Yeah, yeah.
She quit. She quit. Nobody's sure if his deputy chief of staff quit or was fired. It's like, what? Did he quit or he was fired? And then he denied that he was even fired or as far as at a press conference later.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the ranch.
And and then it came out that Sun Road is back in the news again because they're trying to, they needed an easement from the city to build a building or something to build a building because they were going too far into the sidewalk.
Exactly.
So they needed some minor easement.
Yeah.
But the mayor basically said, well, if they want that, they should just give us a lot of money for these other projects.
See.
And
which is the old, but you know what, that's the old politics of San Diego, right?
Yeah.
That's the old school 1970s crap that.
Yeah, but I mean that's politics,
popping.
Right?
It is politics. Yeah,
that's
it is.
Politics,
but
right?
There's another way to approach it today, and now politically, because let's face it, Sun Road isn't the most popular.
I thought Sun Road went out with Mike Aguirre. I thought they were officially retired when Mike Aguirre retired.
Yeah, I thought so too. But some things just won't go away.
I mean, Mike was great for the news. I loved Aguirre in the news. He was so much fun.
Yeah,
he's
a little bit like Filner in some ways. You know, that personality thing, very similar.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but I think in a lot of I think he was a little bit.
Smarter. A little smoother, but still very, pretty caustic in his approach, you know what I mean? That's just the way those guys operate. But I don't know if that's the way that you can actually, I don't know if that's sellable anymore. I don't think it's sexy in 2013 anymore.
No. Well, it depends on whose side you're on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can be very aggressive and stand your ground if your base is behind you, right?
Yeah.
And that's the problem Filner's having, is that liberals are saying he's not pushing a progressive agenda anymore.
Yeah.
And so they're angry at him.
Yeah.
The right is angry at it. He's getting it from both ends.
Yeah. Well, Filner's problem, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, this is what it seems to be anyway, that Filner's problem is Filner. And this is the problem. And if you asked him, he thinks everybody's just, it's on a witch hunt for him. But I think he's got to do some digging and really ask himself the tough question. Is this, am I really approaching this in a way that's going to allow me to try and help San Diego, or am I just making a lot of people pissed off? And not just because of change, but because of the way that he's approaching how he's going about trying to make these changes. And I think he's making a lot of enemies.
Well, do you think he's just being more upfront about it? Because let's face it, that's how politics is done.
Yeah.
If you wanted to really get something through in the Sanders administration, you helped out his library campaign.
Yeah.
Because that was his pet project. That was his legacy there. Right, I mean, really, Pete Wilson started that project way back in the day, but that was Sanders got it done, and so, maybe it wasn't just nearly as blatant as what the Sun Road thing was with Filner. I mean, Is he just being more honest? And like, look, this is how it's how you get things done.
Well, I mean, he may be being more upfront about it in some ways, but I would still say that his approach is not it's not viable and it's not really working for him, and he's really undermining, you know, his ability to actually get anything done because, you know, he's gotten blocked off. You know, I mean, city council hates him. You know, I mean, he just, I mean, he, you know, he kicked the assistant city attorney out of a meeting, had them
escorted out. Yeah.
Which was, you know, I mean, just.
Yeah, and while he was yelling at him.
Yeah.
It's like he's our crazy uncle.
Yeah exactly. Exactly. And it's like.
He's that crazy uncle that you kind of like, right? You kind of are like, you know, as long as you don't have to spend too much time.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate because, I mean, the 1970s Democrat platform that he sort of stood on when we were at, you know, at Fox doing our thing, it's just, it ends up being one of those things where you go, okay, is this really how the 1970s Democrats were they all really irascible and kind of like in your face trying to
He was right, that's how he got stuff done,
that's how he got
went
stuff
and he
done.
he got arrested as a kid.
He
was there, you know, he was part of the bigger kind of national movement in the 60s.
But now the problem is whether or not the legacy and his operational mode is really serving him well. I mean, and if you look at it, to be honest with you, look at the last 7 months, you'd have to say no, that it really hasn't served him well. That in fact,
what does that even mean? What does that even can you kind of define what a 70s liberal means with compared to these kind of new neoliberals that are there?
Yeah, the liberals today are much more moderate. I mean, they're much more liberals today are much more fiscally conservative, much more moderate about even things dealing with civil rights and social issues. I think people today tend to sort of think that, well, we've already got it all together. You know, civil rights isn't a problem anymore. Forgetting the Voting Rights Act issue, we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to
we'll
that.
Talk about that. But
which I mean, you kind of have to talk about Filner with that too.
Exactly, because he was there.
He was,
you know,
there. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We've all seen his mugshot.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And, but the catch in there is really the 1970s Democrat was much more of his into protesting, was really into standing up for rights, really pushing for people's rights, really pushing for, it really was about trying to undermine the bureaucratic infrastructure that was currently in place that came through the Nixon administration of the late 60s. And it was by breaking down all that old politics that had been so prevalent in national and local politics from at that point in time. And I think now the more current liberals, or what they call liberal, which really isn't that liberal, is a much more moderate, fiscally conservative person than what people would normally think of as a liberal. That's why when I hear the conservatives talk about liberals, I'm like, these people really aren't as liberal as, I mean, that's the Green Party. The Green Party are the real liberals of the 70s, the current Green Party, but that's not what the Democrats are.
Yeah, the Green Party's not really even a viable party in the United States.
Yeah,
they're definitely more of a European thing.
Exactly.
I mean, they're serious in Europe, and they have hold seats in Europe, but they don't
have any traction here. Not at this point. And it's unfortunate because they actually, I think some of the things they have to say are very important, but if you know here, you don't get any money, you don't get any voice. That's the way it works in politics here. You know, that's why Congress keeps setting up roadblocks so there's all the outside parties between the two, the Democrats and Republicans, never get any voice because they don't have enough funding to be able to get any seats in Congress. So
it was still just a great week.
I don't think
I've ever heard of a mayor having this much trouble. Just back to back, I can't remember one. Really the last Democrat we had was Susan Golding.
Yeah,
and I mean she had some problems, but she wasn't nearly as abrasive, or there wasn't. I don't remember as many confrontations.
No, it wasn't many confrontational. More on the elite side, you know, she was on the high side of politics, you know, in terms of that. But
I mean, is that the problem? Like I was saying, look, you know, if you want to get something done, you wanted to get something done with Pete Wilson, you had to give him something as well.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you had to do that with all of these guys. You have to do that now.
Yeah, and in truth,
Filner saying, for the TMD, for example, you know, fund this stuff. Let's take some of this TMD money and allocate it for city stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and the right was saying, hey, you know, this is, you're essentially extorting money or coercing us into giving you money that was supposed to go for this other purpose and all, you know.
Exactly.
It's not, but that's how politics works.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, anybody who understands politics on any level recognizes, or should recognize, and if you don't, you're going to get a wake-up call right now, that it's all about the trade-off. It's the barter. So when you, normally when you see legislation come through at any level, at the state or local or national level, it's because somebody had to trade off to get it done. So usually a bill, when it passes, by the time it passes through legislation, has been modified so much that it's hard to recognize what the original bill looked like, because everybody wants a piece of the pie in order to sign.
Yeah, and you get that on city council regulations, you get that on the county board soups things, you get that on every level of government.
Yep.
That's the way government works, and that's the way politics works.
Yeah.
And that's the way our system is designed to work.
Yeah, but that's because it also requires us to be responsible, to keep pressure on them to make sure we know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
And if we don't do that, then the rest of it doesn't even matter, because then you get to see the old boys network at full swing, and that's what we see today.
Who's the most powerful kind of old boy in San Diego that nobody really seems to know about? You used to be able to say Manchester, right?
Yeah.
But he's way too popular now. Who's sort of the, you know?
That's a good question. Most of the people that I knew from back when my dad was, you know, actively back in the day, and are all dead and gone now, you know? I mean, to be honest with you, so I don't know. I really don't know who.
Only 39. I don't know.
Exactly. I'm celebrating my 39th birthday I won't say how many years I've been celebrating it, but enough years.
You just stop at 39.
Exactly. I refuse to go any further.
My father stopped at 17.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's terminally immature.
Yeah, hey, you know, just because I'm 39 doesn't mean I'm not 17 in my head.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, Manchester would have been one of the, you know, would have been.
Because he was a major player before. Yeah. He wasn't super well known. He had the hotel, but he was big money. I mean, I wonder who's really the big money.
That's a good question.
We'll come back and talk
to you about that next week. The Lincoln Club is very, very, which is not, has nothing to do with Lincoln, by the way.
It's just a Republican. They just adopted that name.
Yeah.
Kind of like Log Cabin.
Yeah, exactly.
Republicans.
Yeah, which
thing.
Is.
They adopted because Lincoln was a Republican, but Republicans would have been Democrats. Way the political philosophy.
Yeah, in the 19th century, Republicans would have been Democrats, absolutely. But that'd be interesting. You know, in fact, we'll come back to this next week. Let's just do that. Let's do a little digging this week
and see
if we can figure out and come back next week with the five most powerful players in San Diego
who aren't known to the public.
Who aren't known to the public.
Sort of these
behind the scene guys or girls.
Yeah. Yeah,
because there's some out there, and if some of them might be real estate, some of them are in other positions.
Yeah, of course,
and
right.
Yeah, I mean Qualcomm. People
he's really well known too. Right?
Yeah, he's well known. Yeah, but he tries to stay under the radar as much as he can. You know, what I mean, he's not one of those guys socialite. You know, he's not the socialite type.
Yeah,
so
his wife is though.
Yeah.
What's his name again?
That's what I'm saying.
I can't remember his name.
See, I know. I just talked about him the other day.
I know.
I can't think of his name right now either.
Yeah.
We'll look him up and come back to you on that.
It's Sunday. We're being a little space cadets.
It was hot here yesterday.
We're finally able to breathe. But
yeah, that was a little different yesterday.
So I did invite Filner on, and I spent like 5 hours texting and emailing his remaining press people.
He's got one press person that's left.
I feel sorry for her. I really do.
I would not.
Like all this, I wouldn't. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's not a job I necessarily would
embrace
so much.
With this guy right now,
you
can't control him. He's totally uncontrolled. He's going to do what he does.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't. He was unavailable. After five hours,
he was unavailable.
Became unavailable. Yeah.
Wow.
I told her. I said, "Look, I can do it over the phone. I would have recorded over a phoner. I would have." But no, he was unavailable. And I told him, how about next week? Monday through Friday from 1 to 6. I'll just show up.
Exactly. Can I get 2 minutes? Just a couple minutes.
Yeah, wow, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure everybody's hitting him up for this, too.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, he doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, he doesn't. But
he doesn't want to talk about
it.
But he's got to. He can't not
have
talk
to.
About
I mean, it's not going to go away or... You know, I mean, his legacy as mayor is not. It's going to be...
So now Fletcher is still kind of behind the scenes sort of campaigning in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going to make a serious run against Filner
I've heard mayor. There's some, you know, I've heard that Nathan has got some ideas in mind, and I've heard, you know, possibly maybe mayor and
what
maybe,
about,
maybe more, you know?
Yeah. I wonder, like, Todd Gloria. I know Todd Gloria had his eye on a few congressional seats as soon as they opened up, too, but... I know he wants to get, he's done in the city council.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd be interesting, particularly for Nathan, to see, I mean, if he goes to state level again, that's something higher than the California Assembly, or whether he goes, you know, to something more national, you know, like a congressman. But I think, I know he's got a bright future ahead of him. He really does.
What do you think Todd Gloria could make a run for mayor? Do you think he could seriously win? It would depend on who's running against him,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It would depend on who's running against him, and depends on what kind of platform he stands on leading up to the next mayoral race.
Yeah.
That would be the telltale.
I mean,
sign.
He's pretty good at working with people.
Yeah.
He's very, you know, he's when his district redrew, you know, his district
yeah.
lines redrew, and he moved basically from City Heights to Hillcrest, and his ended up with a much wealthier constituency.
Yeah.
You know, his politics, I seems to me, has shifted to more of that perspective, more of that kind of upper white middle class liberal.
Well, yeah, and if he were down south in southeast San Diego, he'd be probably going with a daishiki and with some mariachis or something, you know? I mean, let's face it, people, like you said, this is
a mariachi and a daishiki, that's pretty good. I like that.
But here's the thing, I mean, you'd have to be able to do it because you're trying to be, I'll use, not to disrespect him, but you have to pander to the population that you're dealing with, where your constituency yeah. is. So whether you believe it or want to.
But it's not really pandering. That's who you work for, and that's
exactly.
what they want done.
Yeah, exactly. So
you got to do what your employer wants.
But you got to be able to connect with them. So you're yeah. going to have to, you know, it's like when Al Gore said when he was running for president, he was hoped his kid would be talking to Latinos, saying he wished his kid was born on Cinco de Mayo. It's like, you know, real Al, come on. You don't yeah. have to go there, Al.
Well,
okay.
that's just, yeah. That's him just being himself and being obnoxious. And that's the problem he had there. So that's who he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's obnoxious.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? And of course he does. Yeah. Yeah. Every politician wishes that, right?
Exactly.
Every politician desperately would love to rally the Latino vote behind them.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God.
That's why the Republicans now
still,
are so, like,
they all totally
now,
misunderstand.
Right?
I think they all, both sides, totally misunderstand it.
Yeah.
You know, Democrats, they tend, you know, in San Diego and Logan Heights and those areas, Democrats definitely have a stronger hold within the kind of Latino vote. But you get kind of these upper white middle class, upper middle class educated, they're, you know, you can't take them for granted. Democrats
oh, well,
cannot
no.
Take
and
them
in
for
fact,
granted.
In upper middle class, upper class, you know, people of color don't tend to typically vote necessarily with who they, you know, with the.
They're a lot more independently minded.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can see a lot more conservatives, you know, and, mm-hmm. and those groups of people, you know, yeah. across the whatever group, you know, they're a lot more fiscally conservative, yeah. and you know, everybody wants to hold onto their money, you know,
yeah.
they want to be able to insulate where their wealth is.
Yeah. So I thought we should be at the county admin building because of Voting Rights Act, the most underplayed story of the week, I think.
Oh, I thought it was
and
the coolest
DOMA.
Building in San Diego.
No, and DOMA, and
yeah.
Prop 8. Three
yeah.
major decisions. I think DOMA and Prop 8 got a lot more attention than the Voting Rights Act. I think the Voting Rights Act was the most underplayed story of the week.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to have much longer term, much more, it's going to be much more impactful. Because Prop 8 decision, even the DOMA decision, wasn't the Supreme Court making a decision about gay marriage.
Yeah.
It was the Supreme Court making a decision about sort of questions of law that are kind of abstract in a lot of ways. It's not that it's kind of like Roe v. Wade wasn't really about abortion.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, but it's like basically
it has this effect, and that's great. But
yeah, but
Voting Rights Act is going to have a much bigger effect because
well, yeah.
they get rid of that. It's going to determine how county lines are drawn. It's going to determine what polls stay open and what polls close.
Well, basically what it's going to do is going to allow 9 southern states, mostly in the South,
yeah.
you know, 9 states from mostly in the South, to basically self-legislate the voting behaviors in their states without any federal intervention. Let's get to the chase in this, right? I mean, that's really the reality of what's going to happen. By a 5-4 vote, this is what SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States,
yeah.
You know, this is what they got to, and have now opened the door for the potential for further discrimination in these without any federal intervention, and that's just I don't understand that. And they did this right in the midst of the same time where they're basically sort of letting letting gay marriage pass. You know.
Yeah.
So it's quite a conundrum when you look at it.
Well, they're two separate questions,
yeah.
right? But like
but they're the same in some ways. Because civil rights, gay rights is civil rights. You know, it's a civil rights question issue.
They dealt with DOMA and Prop 8 weren't civil rights issues at all, were they?
Yeah. Well, they weren't, but they were. They were and they weren't.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah.
They were in this very kind of abstract way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, all the court said was, okay, the decision of the lower court was correct by law, and there's no reason we should take it up, and therefore, they're correct.
Yeah.
And then what was the argument in the lower court against Prop 8?
Well, remember they said that, first of all, that the group that initially filed the appeal didn't have the right to file the appeal.
Yeah.
They did not have the capacity or standing to file the appeal to begin with. So then they kicked it back to them. So basically, Supreme Court got a get out of jail free card because they basically passed it back and said, we're not going to touch this.
Yeah, but they could again if the next group decides that they finds a way to have the right.
Exactly.
They could file this appeal again, and this process could start all over again.
Well, yeah, and that's what I mentioned the other day when I was in the news of the day, and I said, one thing you have to be very careful about here is just because you go from step A to so you begin the step to step B, doesn't mean if you're not very careful. And that you can wind up at step A again. And while I'm happy for those people who have gained and had the ability to get married if they so choose now, and that they've now had the ability to do freely what they've been doing in private or had to do in private, I think it's also that they have to be have to do their due diligence and make sure that they do everything they can to protect and insulate. And help build an understanding so people who don't understand or who are ignorant of those situations to try and grasp to let people live as they should and as they choose to without any fear of any type of reprisal or intervention. I think that's the problem. We're such an intolerant society.
Well, you were one of the few countries. Are there any other countries where you don't have two separate ceremonies? So I know in most places in Europe and in Mexico that you have two separate ceremonies. You have a civil ceremony, and then you have, if you're religious, you'll have a religious ceremony. And those are two separate deals completely.
Yeah. There might be some remote, maybe in Togo or...
Now, the big question now is, right, Mormon Church almost lost their tax standing because they weren't letting minorities in.
Yeah.
Now, can people sue the Catholic Church and say you're not marrying me because I'm gay and use that same argument and then cause Catholic Church or whatever other church
because
Hasidic Jews I don't think would marry gay people either
or
most Baptists or most traditional kind of Christians can you use that to go after their tax standing? You wouldn't be attacking their religion, but you'd be attacking their
The IRS can't go after anybody right now. The IRS is too afraid to do anything right now.
Yeah, but this would be people, activists suing on behalf of that.
No, absolutely. Now, that's a good question. I mean, this is a very...
Because that's how they went after the Mormon Church.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And there's certainly that you could possibly see this happen. I would say it wouldn't be a very smart move early on right now to do that. I think really... The religious aspect dealing with gay marriage is a complicated issue, and it's one that this is one of the biggest.
But that's
struggles.
That point where those two things kind of meet, right?
Exactly.
And that's why I was talking. That's why I was saying, we're one of the few places in the world where you can have your priest or rabbi or whomever that's who marries you, and that's it.
Yeah.
You don't have to go to the you don't have to have somebody separate from some sort of government entity perform the marriage.
Exactly. But again, it becomes a situation where, I know many of my gay friends that believe in God or spiritual people that, unfortunately, in some ways have to hide their spirituality because of the sometimes intolerance of people who think there's something wrong with them because they happen to be gay. And
they have to hide it from other.
Yeah, unless they go to an affiliation.
They end up not participating.
Or they go to an affiliated church where there are other gays that may already be in church where there is tolerance. But, this is the long struggle that we have with religion and these sort of issues that deal with...
Sort of religion and its place in our politics and our culture and all
of
that.
And the question simply is, I still think it comes back to this very issue is, do we have a right to do... I mean, why can't... Though, regardless of where you are in the religious spectrum, if you're a hardline Christian and you believe that this isn't right, well, you have a right to believe that in and of yourself. But do you have a right to try and enforce or shove down people who don't believe what you believe, shove it down their throat? And, and this relates to deal with the word, the word marriage. It's like, why are we so hung up on a word? We get so caught up on words that we don't like that. We can call it civic union, but we don't like it to be called marriage. Yeah.
Well, the thing that always kills me, too, is that people have these weird ideas of what marriages are, right?
Yeah.
And the only reason the government cares who I marry first is so they know how to tax me.
Exactly.
Other than that, they really don't care.
They really don't.
They really don't care. And then marriages are contracts. And that's the other thing people don't quite grasp.
It's a business agreement, right?
It is. It's a business agreement. You're making a contractual agreement with, this other person.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what a lot of this was about, because there's legal in your lives become legally entwined.
Yeah.
And, you know, for married couples, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder. I'm very curious how this is gonna play out. So.
Yeah, but, it should be. This is gonna be interesting. Again, I think this really also speaks to, which we haven't spoken about.
Oh, yeah.
Has to deal with the fact of what's the role of the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court's ability to sort of. You know, try and drive legislation, and then also challenging Congress to say, figure out where Congress's role really is in this, because you know, the question of whether Congress has a right to intervene on this is a question that also is subject to question right now, and that's another issue.
Yeah, I mean, we passed the law. Prop 8 did pass. It was elected, slim margin, right?
Yeah.
Now, what if the Congress decides to pass a law similar to Prop 8?
Yeah.
You know, that's the other big thing. What if that? Well, then can you challenge that constitutionally?
Well, that's why I call this stuff tip of the iceberg legislation. This is legislation that starts the ball rolling. The question is where the next step will come. Will it come that will? So because to me, the gay community has certainly made a step forward. Now, you know, if they plan carefully and approach this, and with the right type of research and information and public and social media context, they can actually play this to their advantage in terms of moving forward and making a wider sweeping legislation across multiple states. I mean, Obama said, you know, and I, you know, would tend to agree with him on this, that, you know, there should not be a situation where if you're married in California, if you're gay and you get married in California, that you should be able to go to Nevada or someplace else, and if you want to, and not have to lose your rights as a married couple if you relocate to another state. And I think at some point, you're probably going to see, at some point, not yet, but some federal legislation that's going to be put out there to deal with this.
Yeah, because there are the states that still ban gay marriage, right?
Yeah,
now,
a lot of them.
And it just because Prop 8 failed doesn't mean that those states have to start marrying gay people.
No, not at all. In fact, they don't have to. That's the problem.
And so you get married in California, you move to what's one? Want to say Montana's one?
Yeah.
I think Montana's one.
Yeah.
You know, and then you buy a piece of property, and then you die.
Yeah. You're SOL.
Who gets it? And that's what it boils down to. It boils down to property.
Yeah.
It's not a, I mean, and that's really the other kind of end road around this too, because
you take an economic issue and you turn it into an issue regarding
a social issue. Yeah, and that's what these things are about. And that's why people get married to secure their loved one's future. Not, you know, it's funny in a way, because you could say that marriages aren't about love in a lot of ways, you know, and that's the major aspect of it there.
Yeah.
Because if you can't pass that property along,
or
you know, that's why California's a community property state.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what Tina Turner said. What's love got to do with it, right?
Yeah, seriously. You know? I mean, you know, I want to make sure if I die that my wife doesn't have a problem having access to whatever meager assets I'm able to leave her.
Yeah.
You know? And that's part of the reason why we have, part of the reason why you have marriages, and part of the reason why you have community property, and part of the reason why those things exist.
Well, at the very least, you can leave them the video equipment.
Yeah, I know. Just sell it all to pay taxes.
Put it on eBay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once used by. She'll end up having to pay someone to take it away. So I think that's one of those things that gets glossed over a lot, because the argument's always, oh, well, you know, love is love, and that's great, and that's a great argument to make, and that's a legitimate argument to make.
Yeah.
But I think the thing, the kind of colder, more, you know, more pragmatic argument is that getting people to think about what their marriages really are.
Yeah.
And maybe it's that kind of self-reflexiveness that people don't want.
Yeah, no,
They want to avoid, because then they have to admit that their marriages are as much contractual arrangements as they are, you know, relationships of love.
Exactly.
And almost equally as much both. Because, I mean, I could just be with my wife.
Yeah.
If I didn't marry her, I would just be with her.
Yeah.
You
still
know?
Have
and
child
she,
and still.
She, yeah, she'd
thing,
just
you know?
Be my baby mama at that
yeah,
point. She'd
yeah.
Just, you know.
Of course, that's not quite a popular term in terms of.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's popular, but it's just not, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not what you want. You know, it's better to be married.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's better to be married.
Hey, I'm
although, you know,
mama.
I'm not going to judge anyone that has a child that they just happen to not be married. And that, you know, the thing is, too, is you do that, you're still liable for paternity. You're still liable for child support. You still have those legal arrangements come with that child.
Heck yeah.
They come even before the child. And that's what paternity suits have been all about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those things come with those kinds of relationships. Yeah. They just didn't exist for gay people.
Yeah, hey, isn't Honey Boo Boo alive and well in Beverly Hills? I want to make that kind of money just to be able to sell myself that way.
Oh,
you know?
My God. That'd be so nice. You just have to humiliate yourself every now and then for large sums of money.
And then go back to your Beverly Hills home and be able to be, you know, nobody even knows the difference.
Laugh all the way to the bank.
Let me ask you a question. So Obama's had to face a lot of stuff here. And it's like, you know, and I was thinking about this. I know we hadn't talked about this, but I was going to ask you about his legacy. What do you think about his legacy so far and where he's at?
You know, I don't know. I think that the big chunk of his legacy is going to depend on how Obamacare shakes out. I'm really curious to see how that pans out. Small businesses are freaked out a little bit because it's going to start to kick in here pretty soon. I think that's going to be the biggest. I think that's going to potentially overshadow long term. The other things.
Even immigration reform.
Yeah.
We just got through the Senate the other day, by the way. You know. And here's the thing about that. As I saw I was thinking, okay, so is this really that they're really happy about it, or are they just trying to figure out how to get the
votes? It seems like a campaign move to me.
Yeah.
It seems like another campaign move and another kind of misunderstanding of Latinos in the United States.
Yeah. People think they just write out the book from Mexico, and it's like, hello, there's more than just Mexicans in the United States.
Yeah, and it's a much more complicated issue, but that's who they're focusing on because they think those are the people that could potentially become their big voters, or their family members who are here that are voters.
Yeah,
you know, even though that.
Well, let's face it. You have the whole Southwest that's basically changing its color simply because of the demographics of Latinos in the Southwest. I mean, Texas may be changing soon. You know, Arizona's changing. You know, Jan Brewer might be in. Might be in trouble here pretty soon.
Yeah, Arizona's polarized, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they could end up with some serious fights.
You have a civil war in Arizona.
I mean, seriously, you've got people that are just complete wackadoos about immigration.
And understanding that there's a complex issue at the borders. The borders are always a problem anyway. But on the other hand, the border issues become an issue because of the economic depravity within Mexico that creates it. And then the question is, who creates that problem, why this happens in Mexico? Because Mexico's climate should be perfect for being able to thrive and be able to build and do
something. Well, all of South and Central America should be perfect for everyone to be able
to thrive. Exactly, but they just end up. But there are a lot of reasons, and we won't get into them today, why they're not. So we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, that's like a whole, maybe we'll... Take a trip to Rosarito and do our thing.
Exactly. We'll go down to La Paz and hang out. We'll catch you while we're on a sailboat somewhere hanging out in the ocean.
Yeah.
Fishing for marlin.
We'll record real quick and then leave.
Exactly. Let's talk about the Middle East a little bit here.
All right.
You want to get to the national issue a little bit?
Yeah, we did DOMA.
Yeah, so we got through.
We did DOMA, we did voter rights, sort of.
Yeah, we did fill
in. Voter rights is too complicated. It's that Section 5 part of it that I think is confusing to people.
Yeah.
They don't understand how that works and how that's going to be applied.
This is the question. And the problem is that if they leave it subject to question, it becomes even more problematic because the gray areas where you'll have every state creating its own interpretation of the ruling.
Yeah.
And that's where the problems
come
in.
And then that's going to affect how district lines are drawn.
Yep.
And that's going to affect who ends up in the House, who ends up in the Senate, both federal and state levels and all those things. So it's going to have a much bigger impact politically long term.
Yeah, I think
it'll be a boon for the right or the left?
Well, it's pretty sketchy.
Because the right votes. They vote. Good.
Well, they do vote. I mean,
the left doesn't vote as much.
Yeah, they really don't. And I mean, part of it is, you know, I mean, the concern here for people of color is always the case. It's just that the notion that racism is gone and doesn't exist and, you know, basically is almost done away with is sort of a very foolish and naive notion, because that's not true on any level. It's just that how it's played out and how it's couched is so different than what it was in the 60s directly. But just like, for example, the other day in the NBA All-Star game, or NBA not All-Star game, the NBA playoff game, we had a Latino kid who was singing the national anthem.
Oh, yeah.
And people started sending in hate mail because the kid was Mexican-American. It's like,
Yeah, because so, he was wearing a mariachi outfit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so people, and yet it was really just a, what he was really making a statement about really was the fact of the diversity of people in the country. But the sad part about that is that the active amount of hate mail that came as a result.
Yeah, no one would get angry if you sing the national anthem wearing a kilt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you came with a kilt or, you know, with a, I don't know, whatever else, if you came in with the British, with the,
yeah, if you were whatever British equivalent,
yeah,
I don't
the
know,
guys
Brooks
who,
Brothers
the guy,
suit,
exactly.
I don't know.
Nobody would be mad at you, you know, for that, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't think you could be dressed as a beef eater, though.
Probably.
Although that would be pretty funny.
That'd be pretty cool, though.
That would be pretty funny.
People, but you know, people wouldn't be as offended.
Get that kid to dress up like a beef eater and then sing the national anthem.
Exactly. I really, you know, it's funny. That I don't think any strange. I don't think people would make a big deal if they were a beef eater. I think people.
No, they would think, oh, here's this quirky weirdo singing the national
exactly.
anthem.
Exactly. They think it was funny, but yeah. But this wasn't. But people. But it just shows again the deep rooted concern about the issue, unresolved issues of race in this country. And people will sidestep it. People are afraid to talk about it. People are, you know, they got the Paula Deen thing going on. And, I mean, it's like, it's almost like.
That's
oh
another
God,
thing. Yeah, we were talking about this when you came to the newsroom the other day.
Yeah.
And it's like, please, she's an old white lady from the South. Of course she said the N-word.
Yeah. How many people?
Who is surprised?
I mean, it's
that?
Like, it didn't surprise me. It's like, I was like, and nothing. I wasn't even mad at her about it. I'm like. I think, unfortunately, just like we're feeling it, Paula Deen's problem was Paula Deen. I think Paula Deen kind of got in her own way.
Nobody liked
really
her to begin with. She's annoying. I mean, look, I couldn't stand
it. I love her recipes, man. She made, that
I
woman knows
I'm
how
not
to cook,
doing
man.
That. Of course, you know, I didn't want. I'm not big into the cooking shows.
Yeah. Well,
I like Anthony Bourdain's style. Well, he's a little bit more my style.
Oh, man. See, I'm a Chef Ramsay guy. I like that. Well, I admit
a little
okay,
bit more
I admit
my
it.
Style. Than,
yeah. I keep getting these ideas of how I'm going to hook up all and do all this cooking, but it never turns out quite that way.
No, that's my wife is definitely the cook.
Yeah, stovetop yeah. stuffing, you know, you know, what do they have? Stouffer's frozen foods, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know.
Hamburger Helper. We actually had Hamburger Helper the other day. Broke down. We were like nostalgic for college eating Hamburger Helper. The kid loved it. We can't get him to eat anything, but he loved Hamburger Helper.
Isn't that funny?
It's weird, you know.
Give him top ramen, man. Give him some top ramen or a cup of noodles.
We gave him some, like, garlic noodles the other day, and he was eating that like crazy.
See, that's what you got to do. Give him a cup of noodles, man. It's stuff that's, I don't know what's made in cup of noodles anymore, but anything
it's,
that's hydrated, anything
nothing.
That's
it's
dried
like,
out.
It's styrofoam and air.
Anything that's dried
that
out for 100
years. No nutritional
years.
Value whatsoever in cup of noodles. That's filler food. But.
Yeah.
So, okay. Let's get. I'm sorry, I sidetracked you from the Middle East.
Oh, that's okay. You know, we can tie food into that.
Talk about Paula Deen.
I know, huh? Paula Deen in the Middle East.
That's like that statement of thing. I don't even know how to transition there. Let's just make it rough and.
That's okay. We don't. That's okay.
Egypt. I know. Egypt was having even more problems. I have a friend, and she works for an English language broadcast in Cairo.
Uh-huh.
San Diego State graduate.
Okay.
And with all these problems there, she stays inside. She won't. She doesn't go out. She, you know, she's very Western in her sort of her way.
Yeah.
The way she lives her life. You know, she's very out. She, you know, when Egypt was rioting, she was right there with it. But now, she's even more scared than she was before.
Yeah.
When that initial kind of Arab Spring thing was kicking off in Cairo, now in Tahrir Square there with all the riots, she'd go out there and she'd get footage and she was. You know, making that part of her coverage.
Yeah.
But now she doesn't leave. She goes to the studio. She does her broadcast, and then she goes home.
Well, again, the concern now going into this is the 1 year anniversary of the inauguration of Morsi, and you know some of the laws he's tried to institute, some have blown back on him. You know, a couple of them he thought he was going to be able to shove down. You know, religious laws he was going to shove down the people of Cairo. Of Egypt and Cairo's throat.
Does he believe that, or was he kind of pandering to that Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, I think he was trying to pander to them because he had to at one point, but I think what it's showing is that the people in Egypt are willing to fight and possibly die to make sure this doesn't happen. And I think that's the part that's, you know, it's dangerous, but it's tremendous. It makes a tremendous statement because, let's face it, there is, in the Middle East, as you know, the juxtaposition between religion and politics is damning, and as a result of that, and the supporters of Islam and the extremists and the fundamentalists on the one hand, who are going to be out celebrating the inauguration in Morsi's 1 year, are going to have to deal with those who are secular and also those who are Islamic progressives, if you would, who see Islam in a different light. And that's where their concern about the violence that may come to fruition is coming from, is that those two in the same location, you know, who's going to control it, what happens when it gets out of control. So everybody's got their eyes on Egypt today, even though so far it's been pretty quiet overall. I mean, we're sitting here, almost 10 hours away. So it's late in the day there. So if you're going, it was going to happen, it probably would have happened by now. And I'm just looking at the updates. I mean, yeah, there are thousands of people that are there, but so far it hasn't been, nothing crazy has happened. So on one hand, it makes it so it just goes to the story. It doesn't mean that nothing will happen. It simply means that it's sort of how we set these deadlines and these dates for the, I call it the dun-dun-dun-dun, and then all of a sudden it's like,
yeah,
you know,
famous last words, yeah, right? You'll say something like that, and then all of a sudden something huge, huge sort of hits. Let me see what I have. I have my international section here. Did I just? I don't know what that's on my other.
Well, the thing about this that makes it interesting also, here. Again, it has to do with what does modern Islam look like? And I think that's the problem with modern Islam, a democracy, which many people say can't work, and I disagree with that for a number of reasons. But the idea of simply recognizing, again, the idea of toleration. Both on both sides, those on the secular side being tolerant of those who have strong fundamentalist ties, but who could agree to peacefully coexist with those who are secular, and again conversely, those on the fundamentalist side, who could comfortably live with the people who are secular and their right to be able to live their lives the way they so choose, you know, within the confines of these Islamic countries.
So is Obama still in Africa?
As far as I know, he's still there. He was he was on the news this morning doing his tribute to Mandela, mm-hmm. who, as you know, we haven't talked about Mandela yet, and of course, that may be a good place to.
Yeah, I mean, he could pass by tomorrow. I mean, he's on his deathbed at this point, right?
Any day. I mean, and we all, of course, everybody would love to see him survive and continue on. If, you know, he's been one of the most tremendous figures of the 20th century, I would mm-hmm. argue. I mean, I think his legacy will come long after he's gone. I think the people recognize what he gave up of his life and most of the important years of his life for those almost 30 years in prison that he spent, 25, 30 years in prison that he spent. And I think that's...
He spent that time in jail not for advocating violence, but for saying he wouldn't be opposed to the use of violence under certain circumstances.
Exactly.
Because he wasn't a total...
No, he wasn't a guy...
Total pacifist.
No, he wasn't.
But... He said at that point in time in South Africa, you didn't need to go there
exactly.
yet.
No, but he did say, you know, sometimes, and again, I mean, people talk about civil disobedience or say that sometimes you have to have the courage to stand up for yourself. And mm-hmm. I think that's what he was really saying. And that applies in any place. It doesn't mean, how you resort to violence, what you do to make that happen. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that sometimes you don't have to put it on the line. And that's how our country was formed. People put it on the line. It wasn't because they sat back and...
Well, everyone's always opposed to violence, especially when they disagree with the person that is protesting.
Exactly. But if they agree with you, then it's like you can go do what you have to do to do that. You know? And I mean, that's why I think people sort of forget the legacy of our own country in getting there. And I think I think at the end of the day, and it's funny, Mandela never, you know, people try to deify him. And Mandela himself said, you know, I have certainly made my mistakes and I am not a perfect person. So don't put me, you know, I'm paraphrasing, don't put me on a pedestal. But, you know, he wants to leave the world a better place. He's trying to help people open their eyes. And I think that that's
so do you, I mean, all in all, I would say he succeeded.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't say that he didn't succeed in that. You know, he became there's certain sort of civil rights figures that become important kind of regionally or nationally to certain countries and things like that. But. He's kind of transcended all of that.
Yeah, he truly is. He was an ambassador to the world. He really was. He was. He truly was a man out of time. And I think he was the right person at the right time. I mean, think about where, even though South Africa certainly isn't perfect and has a lot of problems still, but you can't undo, you know, 100 plus years of a legacy, you know, in a vacuum. But think about, who would ever thought you'd see a black president in South Africa?
Yeah.
Not, you know, at a time when it just came out of apartheid,
yeah.
And to think that you could have an individual like that who could actually try and bring that country together without seeing it. It could have turned into a complete civil war.
Oh, it could have been
Syria time 10.
It almost did. Yeah. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
Roving gangs of neo-Nazis.
Oh, yeah.
Rioting clans against each other.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bad.
Oh, yeah.
When that finally, all of that stuff finally came to a head.
But here's the interesting about Mandela, and he says this. He says, you know, I mean, in politics, you know, sometimes you have to, I mean, and again, I'm paraphrasing, sometimes you have to deal with the devil. Sometimes you have to do things that go even opposite of your own ethical and moral beliefs because of the politics. Sometimes things you believe in, you can't always push your own agenda because of the reality of what happens to be the situation at that moment. You may have to capitulate and you know, set up and deal with people who you normally wouldn't even deal with.
Do you have an example of someone he's dealt with that he normally wouldn't have dealt with, that he would
it's funny, a lot of the former leadership of white South Africa, I think he really, that would be a perfect example. De Klerk and all those people who were mm-hmm. there who either had a change of mind or at least publicly had a change of mind or heart in terms of their views of the Afrikaners.
That period of sort of reconciliation after he was elected, I think was really, really telling of how he wanted the South Africa to evolve.
Exactly.
You know, you had to forgive and get past all of this stuff. But forgiveness doesn't mean you forget what happened.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean you accept that as being the thing that has to happen again. You don't forget these things. You learn from this and you grow, hopefully, right?
Well, it's part of your history. And now, you know, people... I mean,
you can't deny that as being part of it. It's important that those parts of your history, too, even the bad things, I think, inform who people are.
Well, I think right now in South Africa, people are worried about what's going to happen when he dies. People are worried about the reprisal or if there's going to be some sort of, you know, I mean...
So is the political machine there that fragile?
It's fragile. I wouldn't say it's quite that fragile, but it's fragile. I mean, and let's face it, there's a lot of change. And, you know, let's face it, people had to imagine trying to follow in Mandela's shoes, right?
Well, yeah.
And
I mean,
that's a tough nut to crack. And I think that the people who have had to follow him, they all have their own relative political agendas. And some of them maybe carry Mandela's legacy. Some of them don't carry Mandela's legacy. So it depends on who the next players are going to be, but that's also where the danger lies in South Africa.
The worry is that it could degenerate into this tribal, clannish kind of...
Yeah, warfare, if you would, you know, that there's some problems like that. I think it may be hopefully a little more modernized than that in the cosmopolitan areas. However, in some of the more, you know, rural areas of South Africa, there's still a lot of bitterness and anger, and, you know, there's still... I mean, they haven't let go of everything that was from the previous, you know. It's hard to, you've got generations of people who have to change, and the way you change mindset is by time, and it's going to take time.
Is there anyone sort of ready, standing in the wings, you think, that could step up to this? I mean, how would you handle this, right?
Okay.
How would you advise...
You could bring me over, right?
How would you advise the next president or the current president on how to handle this moving forward?
Okay, so if it were me and I was there with their advisor, I would go back and remind them, depending on how far out of kilter they were with the reality of Mandela's policies, the things that were working, you know, I would build on that platform of trying to reach across the aisle, reach across the color line, try to find a centrist perspective. Part of that, it deals with education, because you've got to educate the population. You've got to bring the blacks in South Africa. You've got to bring the education and the sort of socialization process to a lot of the areas that still don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, let's face it, when people start to gain economic resource and viability, then their politics change.
Yeah.
That's the reality, right? So if you want to figure out how to navigate that...
Gloria is a perfect example.
Exactly. So you just have, but you have, I would say, so don't come in and try and, you know, create a political vacuum. Come in and try and, you know, make incremental changes, but let's do them subtly.
But
let's
it's about growth. You're talking about.
Incremental growth.
That's what I meant when I brought it to Gloria.
Yeah, yeah.
He's had to grow into this new kind of, this new electorate, and then that's what you're saying. They have to be willing to reach across to.
Exactly. But you've got to do it incrementally. You cannot go in there and say, look at me, I'm going to come in and change the boat today. You've got to come in literally. You've got to literally come in and say, okay, let's we got a game plan. Let's talk about the 1 year, the 3 year, the 5 year plan. Mm-hmm. Let's think about the things we can win today. What can we win today? You know, you can have a bigger agenda, but think about, but break it into segments so people can swallow the Kool-Aid a little easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you try and give them the green Kool-Aid all at once, they're not going to like you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody likes green Kool-Aid. Sorry, Kool-Aid, that's the truth. Nobody likes lemon-lime Kool-Aid, sorry. Give me the red Kool-Aid. I want the red Kool-Aid.
Oh, man. And then, God, and then Sirius still.
Yeah.
That place, what a friggin' nightmare.
Yeah, it's too bad.
It just keeps getting worse and worse.
Well, it gets worse and worse because, again, nobody
has
it.
And now it's just almost like this sort of standoff now.
Everybody's giving weapons.
Everybody's giving them all, which is the opposite of what they need to do.
Exactly.
It's like let's do the opposite of what would be the best thing for all of these people.
Well, it's like creating your own security dilemma. That's ultimately going to work out to kill more people because more people have weapons.
Well, now that Russia has sort of an economic system and a military-industrial complex, do you think that that's part of the reason why they're more than happy to do this?
Oh, of course.
Because
that's how they made their money. How they made their money. I mean, let's face it, weapons, self-selling weapons, small or large, is a way to make money. That's why they've always continued to do that, and they always will. And the problem is, again,
we're doing the same thing.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely, and that's the problem. But the political blowback on us is not nearly as damning as it can be on some of those. And until the chickens come home to roost in Russia, which they never do, you know, unfortunately, because if they had to deal with the threats of like terrorism and things like that happen in other countries, maybe they would look at this differently.
If those consequences were in Moscow, then they would be acting very different.
It would be very different scenario. But so far, they've been able to dodge that. But if it ever comes home to roost in China or Russia, you know, some act of terrorism by some Middle East, you know, Islamic radicals or some crazy Al Qaeda people or wherever, then you're going to see. Then you will see a different stance. But until then, they'll just take the money and keep going. And that's one of the problems because ultimately it comes down to money. You know.
Yeah. And Assad. I mean, you've been predicting Assad's demise for a long time now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And you know, it's funny. Of all the people, when we first started talking about this three years ago, he's been able to
weasel his way. He's like that fish you just can't grab.
Well,
you know?
Again, the part of this has to do with the politics, the proxy politics being played by the U.S. and the other countries. This is the politics. You have to stay away from it long enough to be able to see who's going to come to power. Now they've got the problem because there are some radical Islamic factions within the FSA, the Free Syrian Army, that they're concerned about coming to power, and just in case. So now we've had to take a moment of pause to go, well, maybe it's not the best thing for us to do. That becomes a problem. Yeah. So now we have to. So that's been the hesitancy, and because of that, and the concern about the potential future leadership, that's a real issue. It's a real issue, real concern.
And now they're talking about, oh, we found these routes for and ways of people we want to smuggle arms into Syria with, and in Syria give them the weapons. Of course, that always backfires.
Yeah, well, that does, and
that always seems to backfire because then all of a sudden it's just. You know, these weapons, I mean, once they're there, we don't have any control over who uses them or where they end up.
Exactly.
We just kind of, we kind of know this guy, sort of.
Yeah.
And
just because we put it in the backyard of the FSA, just happened to be there, you know.
I mean, it's just, and they could end up anywhere.
Yeah.
And then what do we end up giving them? A bunch of AR-15s?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what
and
else.
The Russians are going to throw in a bunch of AK-47s.
Yeah. Who else? We might have given them some other things, too, that nobody talks about.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things making little Hondas with a 50 millimeters bolted to the roof or something like that.
What a great idea, man. Hey.
Yeah, I know. I should be a weapons designer. Right?
I know, for Honda.
That's what they do.
Honda.
These trucks, and they just basically are Jeeps.
Well, that's what they do. Yeah, they'll just mount. They'll bolt
them on.
Yeah, bolt it on and then, you know, do whatever they have to do. But I do think Syria, I think ultimately, I still believe that Assad can't survive this. I just don't think you can kill as many people as he's killed and survive in the long run.
How many hundreds of thousands of people so far, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, the public number is about 100,000, but I mean, I've heard numbers significantly higher than that, you know.
How do you even determine that number?
Well, that's the thing.
One, two, you can't do that.
Exactly. I mean, I've heard numbers anywhere from 200,000 to 300,000.
They're just kind of guessing.
Yeah, I mean,
based on the population that was there, based on the number of refugees.
And the body counts that they have so far.
And the random body counts.
Yeah, I don't think there's any
statistical analysis.
Yeah, because you're counting on outside people to come in and tell you what the numbers are for to be able to do the counts. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, it's not like you've got an exact number of people in the hospitals counting up who's dead from what and why and how, you know. So it's, that's a difficult thing to do in any war, very difficult to sort of ascertain the real, you know, death toll.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. But I do think ultimately, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I really do think at some point, and I don't know when, I don't have an answer as to when anymore, but I think I don't see how he can survive this in the long run. Too many people are going to hate him for the people that he's killed.
Yeah. And I wonder how Syria survives this in the long run, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's the troubling part. And then how many more people have to die in order for this to stop, you know, and when does the rest of the world get the political will to stop them, if they do it all? You know?
Yeah.
And that's a tough part. That's a tough
so,
part.
So what do you think Filner could learn from Mandela about reaching across the aisle?
You know,
I'd love to have Filner on. I wish he would have come on.
I know. I think you got to take the Dr. Field approach.
He only lives 5 blocks from here. I know where he lives.
Go knock on his door. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
A good doorstep, the mayor.
I know.
I'm sure that would go over really well.
He'd have somebody try to remove us, right?
Yeah, from the city.
Yeah, exactly.
they would escort us to L.A.
Yeah.
You live here now.
But, you know, I think, it's like, I always think the Dr. Field thing. Dr. Field said one time that his father told him when he was growing up, sometimes you never want to miss a good opportunity to shut up.
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes, he's got to learn how to play the politics of 2013. And I don't mind if he reaches back to try and get a little bit of that grit from the 70s, but he can't base his whole reality on that. It's just that old school politics is just the political machine.
I mean, he's a smart guy.
Yeah, he is.
Why hasn't he kind of figured that out yet?
Well, there are a lot of smart people think they can kind of, you know, let's face it, vision people. And I think if Bob has his own vision, I give him credit for that. I just think that even people who are intellectually astute, and he's a smart guy, you're absolutely right. But I think even, you know, sometimes our egos can get
smart
in our way.
Smart people do stupid things all the time.
Yeah, and your ego can get in your way, and you can still try and believe, and let's face it, successful people try things a million times, and then they finally get the one thing that makes it work for them. And what he's trying isn't working right now, so now the question is going to be whether or not he can actually make a change, shift gears a little bit. It doesn't make him look like a wishy-washy person, but it shows that he has the ability to assess the situation, make some corrections, and then try and figure out how to reach across the aisle before he burns any more bridges. Because he's burned
every
bridge.
It seemed pretty bad this week.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a train wreck.
I mean, I just couldn't believe how.
It's
like
one thing after another to lose 2 major staff members in that short amount of time
in
protest.
And 9 people in the last month or two just jumped ship.
Just kind of forget this. I don't want to be near this guy anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and that's so at some point, hopefully you have a
I know a guy that was offered a job and didn't with him and didn't take it.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, he was like, no. Yeah. I knew going in what kind of guy he was. And, you know, the problem was, too, is that he's, you know, works these 90-hour weeks.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a family. He doesn't have any kids. He's got a girlfriend or a wife. Is he married? Did he marry her? Is that his fiance?
I don't know if he married her or not. I thought Bob did have kids, though. I thought he had kids.
I didn't know. I don't know.
I thought he had it. But anyhow, but the fact is just that, you know, he's
the Paris trip. We forgot about Paris.
Oh, yeah.
He went to Paris.
Yeah.
Channel 10's getting spoon-fed information from somebody because he went to Paris last week and comes back.
Yeah.
There's no way a Freedom of Information request gets filed in less than 10 days.
Yeah.
And they all of a sudden have all of this Freedom of Information that they clearly did not file for.
Yeah.
That somebody handed them.
Yeah.
To talk about his Paris trip. He's been going to Paris to work with Iranians in exile there, sort of towards their pro-democracy.
Exactly.
And he's been doing this since he was a congressman. So he goes back now, and they pay for his trip back. Now, the question is whether or not they paid for the 2 SDPD officers that went with him as well. And then Republicans come out saying special interests sending Filner to Paris, and there's all these pictures of Filner with a beret on in front of the Eiffel Tower. I mean, it just gets worse. You know, that was the I couldn't believe it was just so many this week that I forgot about Paris.
Yeah, he's going to have to figure out how to clean up his image, because here's what happens though.
Had he paid for the SDPD officers to come, but none of the information is out yet.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm very critical of Channel 10 putting that information, story out there without actually having all of the information, because there's no way that FOIA was filled
that quickly.
They had to be getting it somebody. And rumor is that, you know, somebody in other departments in the city that have agendas against Filner.
Which is every department practically in the city.
Yeah. Who's to say who that is? But there's no way they filed a FOIA and got his ticket and itinerary and all that kind of stuff that you have to email.
Yeah.
Of course, it just doesn't happen that quickly.
Yeah.
They filed FOIAs. It takes at least a week.
Well, you know, but the biggest problem that Bob really has to be concerned about, and hopefully for Democrats in San Diego, is that because he's being sort of, now he's being looked upon and demonized by a lot of Democrats, how does that resonate with the Democrats in San Diego in terms of looking at him, or whether they'd start to jump ship or start to look elsewhere or start to look into guys like Nathan Fletcher or whoever else might step into that position, you know?
Yeah, but, or is Fletcher just, what would he be? He'd be a dino.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is he a Democrat in name only? Because, you know, really he was a Republican for a long time, and, you know, Republicans are framing him as someone who just got angry that he lost an election.
But here's the thing about Nathan. This is my own personal opinion, and that's that I don't think he has to be a dino necessarily, because let's face it, as I said earlier, the Democrats today are much more moderate, and they're probably you can either be Tweedledee or Tweedledum. You could be considered a moderate Democrat or a moderate conservative, and you're pretty much in the same ballpark, other than maybe a couple of issues. There's really not much separating one from the other. And I always believed that Nathan was really a moderate conservative. And so just because you happen to jump on the other side of the ship wasn't a big jump for him, I don't think, because I don't think he was as hard line as some of the far-right issues.
Do you think Democrats see that?
Well, I don't know if they see it yet, but I think if he wants to run for mayor or any other office, he'll have to build that platform that suggests where he really stands. And he's got time to do it, but he's going to have to start. Now's the time to start building that foundation for identifying what your role and stance is going to be. And I think part of it, he's probably waiting to see where the Republican Party is going to stand so that he can figure out how to frame his own platform around where they aren't as opposed to where they are, and where he comes as a very centrist sort of figure. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if he plays it well, this could be an easy game for him to win on any level he tries to get to. Especially as he learns, as he grows politically and gains more of the game.
And I suppose it depends on who he's running against, too.
Yeah, but let's face it, I mean, you know, he's got the style, he's got the look, you know, I mean, he's got a lot of what Americans sort of glean for. Now, if he really builds his base and his abilities and really gets himself there, which I believe he could, that he could be pretty formidable to deal with, which could be interesting.
And he really serves, as opposed to like Hedgecock, who used to tell people he served, but he never served.
Boogie board is not surfing, okay? Water wings is not surfing.
Years ago, he was doing a shoot for San Diego Magazine, and he was trying to tell everyone that he knew how to surf, and so he was out there posing with all these surfboards. So the editor at the time was like, oh, let's go out in the water. We brought the housing. Let's go out in the water. Come on, Roger. Let's go out in the water, paddle out. We'll get shots of you riding some waves, and we'll put that in the story, too. He's like, oh, I can't surf. He just wanted to stand there with the surfboards.
Surfer Joe.
Yeah. But, you know, that was his campaign at the time. I guess he thought he had to do that to...
I tell you, he would have been
mayor in San Diego.
He would have been really cute with some water wings on, though.
That would have been funny. I probably would have voted for him.
Yeah, exactly. People would have thought that was really hilarious. You know?
It's like riding in Pauly Shore. Yeah. Just vote for the mayor with a water wing.
Exactly. That would have been great. He would have been a good platform with some floaties on out in the ocean.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. It's kind of like watching Filner ride a bike when he was doing his little promo thing for Bike San Diego.
Yeah.
He started to ride the bike and then just quickly like drifted to the right and then drifted to the left, and I was watching the feed as I was live as we were getting, and I'm like, we're thinking he's gonna fall over and crack his head open trying to ride a bike.
Next time we'll get a bigger trike. We'll get training wheels on it, okay? We'll put some hidden training wheels on it, so at least you can't fall over.
I was and we're all laughing. I was like, oh god, he could kill himself. Poor guy.
People are taking bets. Man. I think there were some Vegas line bets in there, you know, whether he was going to fall over or not, right?
Yeah. Well, this has been nice.
Yeah, it's been great. I love it down here.
The sun finally came out. It's starting to actually warm up again. It was really hot this morning.
Yeah.
Then the moon came in.
Yeah,
it was nice. I liked it. Now it's hot again.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, this is one of the most beautiful buildings in San Diego. If you haven't been to the county administration building.
You should come down here and get married.
Yeah, come down and get married. good luck with that.
Show up Monday morning. I think. You know, I wonder what the line's going to be like.
Do you think they're going to start
marrying people Monday morning?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they can.
This might get pretty busy down here.
I've got a live shot for Monday morning.
Oh, that'll be great, man. Then we'll tie it in next week.
Well, yeah. I'll send, we'll send, probably send Matt Johnson down here then. I think they open.
Sweet.
Well, of course, you know, first day back.
Yeah.
They used to do them over on the lawn there,
right?
Valentine's Day and all the big holidays, they'd all go out to the lawn over. But now they got all the construction.
Well, you know, they may have to do it out here because, let's face it, it's going to get busy inside the building. So they may have to do it outside anyway if there's a huge line.
I wonder if
they'll
be
move it
line,
outside.
Huh?
They'll have to. So it should be a pretty interesting morning. I'll be watching the news, Fox News, on Monday morning.
Yeah. Well, everyone should. You should set your alarm or your DVR at 4:30 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Yeah.
That way you don't miss a minute of
the
excitement.
And then on Thursdays, you have to, since I'm now on Thursdays,
Thursdays
not on Tuesdays.
Thursdays at 6:40 every Thursday. Set your DVR from 6:30 to 7.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You'll catch me on doing my political stuff, trying to.
Everything you need to know.
But I won't use my potty mouth, I promise, really.
It's okay. Well, no, don't. Not on the air.
Damn it,
on this thing, we can say anything we fucking want.
Matt,
but on TV,
Matt,
you can't say any of that. I always check the explicit mark on the thing when I put it onto iTunes. It always says explicit, even though 9 times out of 10, it's not explicit.
I know. What the heck?
But I always check explicit.
What the heck?
What the heck?
Hey, have a great day, my friend.
All right, man. You too.